I'm Katie Atkinson. I'm a professor of computer science at the University of Liverpool, and I'm head of the Department of Computer Science.
Hello, I'm Asif Roach. I'm head of Department of Computer Science at Liverpool John Moores University.
Hi, I'm David Reid, associate professor at Liverpool Hope University.
I'm Carrie Whitten. I work for the Knowledge Transfer Network, and we run a members organisation called Immerse UK, and we're funded by Innovate UK.
Maybe we should start with you, Carrie. You did a report that came out, I think, in April, where your organisation, Immerse UK, mapped what's going on in immersive tech around the country.
The intention was to kind of do a baseline of what is going on in the sector. We engage with businesses on a daily basis, so we think that we understood the sector and the growth of the sector, but actually we wanted to kind of do some in-depth research ourselves. If you're kind of aware of immersive technology, there's lots of numbers flowing around about what the growth of the market's going to look like by 2020, what it's going to look like by 2025. So we were really keen to do some, as I say, some baseline research of our own and kind of really establish what the market looks like. And it's good and it's promising, and I think that's really reassuring for businesses to hear. The report breaks down businesses into particular areas, so there's those that businesses that we class as specialists, where over 50% of their turnover is specifically in immersive technology. Then we've got what we're calling participant businesses, which are less than 50% of their turnover is in immersive tech. And then we've also got others as well, those other businesses that are kind of working in and engaging with immersive technology but actually aren't generating any revenue from it yet. But one of the biggest areas that came up is around skills and training and talent, and I know obviously this is what this session's about, so I'm really keen to kind of get feedback from the audience and obviously discuss with my fellow academics here about what that talent looks like and how we can address it and how we can ensure that the immersive tech sector within the UK is a global player and a leader within that field, which it currently is, but it has, you know, there's lots more potential that can ensure that the sector is one of the best within the world.
Where are the hubs? Where is it in the country that people are doing?
Liverpool is definitely on the map, and there's kind of no surprises, I suppose, with where some of the other hubs are, but, you know, Bristol, London, obviously, Manchester. I think you'll find that there's some emerging hubs as well. Nottingham is in there as well, which might be a surprise to some people, but I think that's what we're finding is that more and more businesses are using immersive technology, and these hubs are growing. And as I say, they're not necessarily sector-specific either, and they might verge on that kind of businesses that are really purely specialist for immersive technology or not. So there's lots of different ways that businesses are engaging with the technology. Those hubs are hugely important to the growth of the sector as well.
A lot of this is about skills and where the skills are. Do you think if you have a hub, is that then the perfect place to keep growing, or should everybody else be trying to catch up?
I think a hub gets created for a number of different reasons. I mean, we talk about talent here, and we're all in computer science departments, but talent can take many different forms, particularly in this particular sector. And I think Liverpool's got a particularly well-placed position because of the past it's had, the performance ability it's had here, and the other types of sectors that have grown up here that basically fit really well into this emerging field. So it's not just technical ability, it's the critical space, getting that critical, all of those factors coming together at the same time to create a perfect storm, as it were.
Where you have those hubs, what you'll find is where those collaboration opportunities then exist between those businesses. Actually, you might have a specialist company working with a participant company that might be working with individuals and academics, and that's where those hubs really then start to excel, is actually where they're really partnering together, and that's where speed happens and growth happens rapidly, is where that kind of collaboration.
Because it's such a new field, you basically want to try new things out. Nobody really knows how to create proper 360 films at the moment. The narrative for film is completely gone. Things like panning and zooming don't apply in 360 films, so something might be happening behind your head. So how do you get somebody to look at a particular area at a particular point in time? All of that stuff is open to experimentation.
That partnership stuff between universities and industry, Atif, you're wanting to set up a VR, AR centre. Is that the one that will work with manufacturing?
That's certainly part of the remit of it. One of the interesting things about AR, VR as an area or immersive technology is the hardware has been developing very, very rapidly, so it hasn't matured enough to a point where things have started to, where you can see what the landscape is. So we've been kind of driven by each of the new developments and in a slightly different direction. That is just about changing now. So particularly for augmented reality now, the very big companies, your Apple, Googles, are now interested in AR through your smartphone, and that's what we're going to see very rapidly in the next 18 months or so. So there's a certain level of stability now which allows us to actually look at problems that we're trying to solve as opposed to just playing with new tech. And I think that's a really crucial point. We're just getting to a point where we can now say, yes, we understand what this technology is, and now it is about what problems can we solve together. So there is a need for a partnership in terms of industry directing us to the key problem areas and then using the university's research talent to actually address those directly.
Just picking up on one of the questions that's come in there, so somebody's asked what the practical applications are. So Atif's already mentioned a few. So I'll just mention another one that we've been working on at the University of Liverpool. So we have a virtual engineering centre that is run in collaboration with industry. It's an academic and industry involvement, and they've been working with the Innovation Centre at Alderhay Children's Hospital at looking at how VR technologies can help the surgeons in their work. One particular example was a model of children's hearts is able to be built, and that means that a surgeon can then go and see if there's an operation that needs to be done on a child's heart. We get the model of that heart built up from the MRI scans, and you can see where the problem area is, investigate it prior to even going into the surgery. That's just one example, and there's loads of others that you could trot out that people might not be seeing necessarily in the news as much, but they are going on. Everybody wants a piece of the pie, and the technology is now at a stage where we're able to start to deliver on that.
So are you getting requests all the time for sort of partnership working with industry?
My own particular area of research is AI applied to law, so how do you build AI applications to support lawyers in their work and legal reasoning and judicial decisions? It's every week that industry, I'm getting phone calls, emails, almost on a weekly basis from people who are wanting to know, I've seen these other companies doing this, I've heard about this research going on there, can we have a conversation about what we could do to improve our business processes and also deliver better results for clients as well?
We should start looking at the Slido questions, and there's one just above your head saying, how do we address the lack of skills quickly, and how do you encourage people to get into a thing that they're just, you know, there's not enough people coming through as computer scientists?
The next big thing is probably going to be AR, and I personally believe that the sort of the new platform is going to be spatial computing, where you basically bring together immersive technology, AI that understands the outside world, and IoT as well, probably. I know myself and Atif have talked about this in the past. And those three areas have lots of different skill sets involved with them.
So if I was 14, what should I be doing? What should I be studying at school? And what should I be doing in my spare time?
Well, personally, if you're talking from my viewpoint, it would be computer science, obviously. But there's no reason why you have to just study computer science. You look at the new technologies and how to exploit the new technologies in a creative way.
I think there's a really key point here, and it goes back to skills. So the Royal Society did a report on computers at schools 6 years ago, and they've just done a follow-up report because nothing has changed. The problem goes right back to the start of school, literally when at primary school, boys and girls need to understand that there is a creative aspect to doing computer science, because there is. It is definitely creative, very, very creative indeed. In fact, you're effectively inventing the future. Why wouldn't
exactly.
that be creative?
Yeah.
The real problem, unfortunately, is that girls get put off very early on, literally at 4 and 5, because boys push them out of the way when the tech comes, literally, physically. And we need people in at that level who understand the importance of this stuff from then right the way through, so we don't get that binary divide where people think it's either art or sciences.
And it's not, I don't think it's just about what children might be doing, but it's what grown-ups are saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did a piece about the studio school for Radio 4, so just the school's just up there, and somebody I was talking to there said that one girl had said she wanted to do, I think it was computer science, and the teacher from another school said, but you'll be the only girl in the room.
Looking at that question, the lack of, how do we address the lack of skills quickly? I think there needs to be a kind of a several pronged approach to making sure that, as a coming back to my point about making the UK a leader, that actually there's several different strategies that we, whichever part of the industry you're in, whichever maybe you're in the government department, that we need to take. And that is absolutely about encouraging girls within to the sector, not, you know, making sure that we've got all sorts of diversity characteristics within the sector. And you're right, that has to start at this age. And then it's about kind of, as you work up the education system, going, okay, so what skills do we need to be teaching at A level? And then I know that we had a discussion just before the session around courses at university. Do we need to be having specific immersive technology courses at a degree level and postgraduate level? But I think there's also, in a more immediate question of how do we address the lack of skills quickly, as in now, like as in the next month, the next 6 months, the next year. We at Immerse UK, all of our advisory board and businesses that we've been talking to over the last 18 months, skills, talent, training, knowledge, is coming back to us time and time again, and is one of the biggest barriers in the report as well, that is facing the UK immersive economy. So two things: what are the skills and training that are needed, and how and who are going to develop these and deliver them to ensure that those gaps are filled?
There's a funding stream, Audiences of the Future.
Yeah, there's a funding call out at the moment called Audiences of the Future. £33 million on the table from government. It was announced in the autumn statement last November. There's two funding calls open at the moment. So there's a demonstrator programme, so we're looking for 4 times 4 million projects to create a big demonstrator programme that are going to reach over 100,000 people, and that's under the areas of sport, moving image, performance and visitor experience. If you want some information from that, it's all on our website. There's been some briefing sessions around the UK, and there's webinars happening at the moment where you can kind of find out some more information about that. And there's also something called Design Foundations under that call as well. So they're the two calls that are open at the moment, and there'll be some creative R&D calls later in the year, probably October time. For us, it's hugely exciting that actually government have recognised immersive technology, and particularly within the creative sectors, and the potential of new audiences, whichever area you happen to be in, is they're seeing as having huge value.
I'm going to go back to some of these questions. So here's a good one from Adam. Could you ever see a future where code is taught as a compulsory language in schools on par with traditional languages?
I wish. I think that's... Oh yeah, I think it should be. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think it should be, because I think producing programming code is part of a process. And the bit before that, before the coding, is understanding a problem and decomposing it into its component parts, such that you can then use the programming tool to solve the problem. Absolutely it should be, because problem solving is key to anything that we do.
Margaret Wing basically was a pioneer of this type of stuff, really. She came up with the idea of computational thinking, being able to decompose a problem into its logical parts and basically coming up with a solution for it.
What we say, and I'm sure my colleagues here will say this as well, we don't teach how to use a particular programming language. We teach this computational thinking. Then once you've learnt one language, then you should be able to pick up any programming language. Yeah. And I think that is coming into the school's curriculum a little bit more. So a few years ago, there was a change in the school's curriculum where the ICT curriculum went, and it's been replaced by the computing curriculum. And I know at Keech Stage 2, you have to look at two programming languages, one of which must be textual and non-visual. And we're already seeing the difference of students who are coming into us in year one. Previously, we would have a lot of people who didn't have much programming experience at all, and now we're seeing more and more who are coming in, who are getting into that mode of computational thinking and who have got some prior skills. So I think that, yeah, we would just encourage more of that coming through as well.
And another thing that's come up a lot in these sessions is this question about how do you keep people in Liverpool, how do you stop them going to London? I'll start with you.
And the rest of Europe is what I would add onto that question.
So, from March next year.
Well, no, already it's happening. We've certainly seen already the brain drain, starting with academic staff. So even more, we need to be making sure that the students who are coming up through that pipeline, who are going into both industry jobs and also academic jobs as well. I know that there's reports that always come out on the shortage of people with AI skills and machine learning skills. The big companies are also taking a lot of the academic staff as well, with their high salaries that they offer. So there's the skills for business, but also the skills for the next generation of people who are going to be producing the next solutions. One thing that we do that is proving very popular each year, we get more and more applicants to our degree programmes with a year in industry. So every single one of the degree programmes that we offer at University of Liverpool in Computer Science has the option of a year in industry. I think that's helping. So if we get, there's lots of SMEs in the area who have got interest in this, quite often they will make a job offer to students at the end of that placement, not always. So that's a nice way of getting some experience and of walking into a job at the end of it. So I think the more networks that we can create of SMEs, and also there's some of the larger companies have branches as well. So if we can get people into those early doors, then that's one way we can help that. And of course, if funding is in a particular area, then the people will follow the funds as well.
I think immersive technology generally, there's still a lot of big questions to answer, but it's starting to stabilise. So there's a point where inward investment is needed now. So it is possible to do it. We do need startups and we do need investment in Liverpool. That's the reality. There's undoubtedly a lot of students want to stay in Liverpool. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. They don't want to move, but they need the opportunities.
There's something here from a student from the studio school who says, what practical advice could technology businesses give to students?
A short answer would be work on the professional skills as well as the technical skills. Absolutely, the technical skills are necessary. Over and over again, our industrial liaison board tells us that they want people who can write a good report, who can deliver a good presentation, who can speak to clients. So the soft skills are equally as important as the technical skills.
Yeah, right. I'd echo that. And what I'd say is I think what people forget is, you know, we carry and bandy these things around and you forget the level of complexity in there. No one person can develop that. It takes a team of people, exactly what Katie said, and you have to be able to communicate your ideas. And if you want to change the world, become a computer scientist.
Dave?
Be enthusiastic and never lose your wonder about how fantastic technology is and the potential of technology to change. You're not changing the future, you've got the potential to guide your own future, to actually manipulate your future.
Carrie?
Yeah, I come back to the point about making connections. Ensure that you're using your network. It's not just about you. It's about kind of the collaborators that you're working with and the potential that you have as a team, rather than just kind of trying to work in silos. And there's lots of opportunities to do that.